First, let me ask whether anyone has experienced any technical difficulties with A&P Revealed.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
So what exactly are we doing?
Well, that's why it's important to load the three lists using the three codes I published on my site, because if you're in the full-blown program, you have access to everything, but you want to restrict your attention to just the list you're required to know, which are those three lists I published. Once you have those and you stick to them by going to the My button, then you're guaranteed to study just the stuff you know or you need to know. Once you launch it, there's the little My button in the upper, the green My button toward the upper left. And that's where you choose your lists if you've already loaded them, or it's also where you load the lists if you haven't loaded them yet. Have you been playing around with the options? For instance, have you realized that if you hit the check mark button, which is also on that top row, that allows you to test yourself different ways? You can have a combination test, which gives you all kinds of different types of questions. You can have a practicum type test, in which case you actually have to type in the name of the muscle, which can be helpful in memorizing them. You can also have one where it gives you the name and you have to click it correctly on the image, or a multiple choice one. Those are all things that you should drill yourself with. And in case you didn't notice, you can also hit the pronounce button and have the name of the muscle be pronounced, in case you want to know how to say it. But anyway, if you haven't played around with it yet, you are behind. You should have already been doing that. So do so soon. It's more of the same tonight compared to last week. It's really just the finishing up the list, right? So now you have to concern yourself with the muscles of the limbs. Please overlook the fact that these model companies called this the muscled arm. It's more than just the arm. It's the entire upper limb, and that one's called the muscled leg. It's more than the leg. It's also the thigh and the foot, so it's the lower limb. But that's things you want to pay attention to tonight. That's the new material in terms of models. I also put out that trunk model again in case you want to have a look at it. You can review last week's stuff on that and on the Muscle Man, although you're using Muscle Man for this new batch of things tonight as well. Last time I didn't have that half head out because I didn't have the key for it and I didn't want you to be confused. Now that I found the key, I put that out as well. It's the same muscles as on the trunk, but just a slightly different view of them. By the way, always make sure you're using the right key. That can really mess you up. And speaking of keys, not only use the right one, but each key is a full list of everything that's on the model. That doesn't mean you have to know everything. Don't bother looking at everything on the key. Only ones you need to look at are the muscles that are on your list in the plastic things at your desk. So your overall list, by the way, of muscles for the practicum is the combination of the list that's on that page, front and back, plus the combination of all the lists that I published for A&P Revealed. Okay? One thing I didn't mention last time when I gave the mini lecture was any discussion about origins and insertions. What are these? They're attachment points, right? Every muscle has an origin and an insertion, at least one of each. The muscle doesn't directly connect to bone, of course, right? A skeletal muscle connects indirectly to bone via a tendon. So there's a tendon on either end of a muscle. And the tendons directly connect to one bone on one end and another bone on the other end. One of those ends is called the origin, one's called the insertion. And what makes the difference is how the muscle operates. So the origin is connected to the bone that, when that particular muscle is operating, that bone will stay more or less stationary. It'll move either not at all or not very much. The insertion end is the end that gets pulled. So when the muscle contracts, it's going to pull on the bone at the insertion end, and that bone, whatever it is going to move greatly with respect to the origin bone that stays put. And so every muscle has its own origin and insertion point, and those are actually listed on Mastering A&P, A&P Revealed as well. You're not actually required to memorize origins and insertions or actions, but it's sometimes useful to think about those in terms of where the muscle is placed. That's one reason. If you know that the origin is on some bone and the insertion is on another bone, and you just imagine a string connecting those two points and that string getting smaller, getting shorter, you can visualize what's going to happen. So you should be able to make sense of the actions. But it's also sometimes useful to look at the origins and insertions just because that, just like I was talking about last week, that can often reveal the name of the muscle. Because the muscle, like in the case of sternocleidomastoid, like I was talking about, attaches on one end to the sternum and the clavicle, and at the other end of the mastoid process, that gives away the name, the origins and the insertion. Okay, so before I let you loose, I want to go through some names of these, just like I did last time, to convince you that the names make sense. Again, this time we're just looking at the limbs, though. And one thing I want to say right away is that there is no such word as bicep. There's no such word as tricep. Watching sports, I hear this all the time. People talk about tricep injury or a bicep injury or whatever. It's biceps. That's the singular. Triceps is a singular. Also, there's no muscle called the biceps. There are two muscles with the word biceps in it. But you can't use the nicknames for muscles. You can't say the lats or the delts. You have to, in anatomy class, you have to use the whole name. So there's a biceps in the arm and there's a biceps in the thigh. And that's why they have more than just the word biceps to their unique names. The one in the arm is called the biceps brachii because brachium is the arm, right? There's a biceps femoris in the thigh, femoris meaning the femur. But biceps, triceps, bi of course means two, tri means three. Seps, which is the same root as in cephalic, meaning of the head, seps means head. So biceps literally means two heads. Triceps means three heads. It's not talking about this head. It means heads of origin. So there are two connection points at the origin for the biceps brachii, and there are three heads of origin, three connection points for the triceps brachii. All right? That's why they get their names. Also, if you imagine this muscle man in the anatomical position, the biceps brachii, which is this muscle, notice it's right on the anterior aspect of this limb. And once you know that placement, imagine it getting shorter. When it gets shorter, that's going to bend the elbow. It's going to flex it, right? The angle is going to decrease. Because muscles can only, on their own, shorten. They can't push. They can only pull. To straighten that back out, assuming that gravity doesn't do the job, so if you're in this position where gravity won't work to straighten it back out, you're going to have to use a muscle to pull from the other direction to straighten it out. The triceps brachii is on the posterior part of the limb so that when it pulls, it will undo the action of the biceps brachii. And therefore, the biceps brachii and the triceps brachii form a pair that are examples of antagonists, antagonistic muscles. They work in opposite directions. One undoes the other, in other words. Synergists work together. They do the same thing, basically. But antagonistic muscles work differently. It's not just the biceps brachii on the anterior surface, though, that does flexion. All of these muscles on the anterior part of this limb are going to flex things. Because when they pull, you can either flex the wrist or flex the digits or flex the elbow. They're all going to be flexors. And that's why a bunch of them get the name flexor so-and-so. Like flexor carpi ulnaris. The carpi refers to the carpus, the wrist. So it flexes the wrist and it's connected at the ulnar side of the forearm. What is the ulnar side? Pinky side or thumb side? Pinky side, right? The thumb side would be the radius, right? Well, there's a flexor carpi radialis as well. connected to the other side of the wrist. And so the posterior part of the limb, those are going to be extensors because they'll either extend the elbow or the wrist or the digits. And they have corresponding names. If we look at the lower limb, also notice brachioradialis. That's an example of one that's named for its connection points. Connects the brachium, the humerus is the bone of the brachium, with the radius, one of the forearm bones, or the antebrachial bones, brachioradialis. Looking at the lower limbs, there's a group that gets its own name right in the anterior part of the thigh. So it's not a single muscle, it's actually four muscles. What do we call it collectively? Call those collectively? Quadriceps is a nickname, and by the way, there's also no such thing as quadricep. It's quadriceps femoris. That's the official name, but it's not just a single muscle. That's a muscle group. Quadriceps femoris is called that because there are four individual muscles making up the group. Three of those muscles are vasti. Vasti is the plural of vastus. And just like the word vast, it means large, expansive. These are meaty muscles. A lot to them. So that's three of the four. There are three different vasti, and they have unique names, of course. But the other one, the fourth one, is the one you find right on the front of the thigh, exactly in the anterior part of the thigh. And that's called the rectus femoris. What does rectus mean?
What?
Straight, yes. So, that's the only one that's not a vastus. The two of the three vasti are superficial, so you see them in Muscle Man right here. One of them is medial to the rectus femoris, or it's medial part of the thigh as well, so it gets the name vastus medialis. By the way, it's medialis, not medius. Medius appears in some muscle names, not this one. So, for instance, there's a gluteus medius, but it's a vastus medialis. Vastus lateralis is on the other side. It's laterally placed. Well, if you were to cut the rectus femoris and reflect it out of the way, and then you would see the muscle that's immediately deep to the biceps femoris, the rectus femoris, and that's the third vastus. It's called vastus intermedius because it's right between the other two. So that's the quadriceps femoris. Before I forget, I should mention this one that's laterally placed along the thigh. Wanted to mention that because it's probably the most frequently mispronounced muscle in the body, even by most instructors. Most people do not bother to pronounce this correctly. But I noticed when I was hitting the pronounce button playing around with A&P Revealed that the chick on A&P Revealed, her voice actually does the correct pronunciation, which is impressive. Anyway, there are two different vowels at the end of this middle word. It's tensor fasciae lati. The I is an E sound and the AE is a separate E sound. Tensor fasciae lati. The name, of course, makes sense just like on the other examples. Notice that the muscle ends here, but it connects to a very long tendinous sheath, which is an example of a fascia. And so when the muscle contracts, it tenses on or pulls on this laterally placed fascia. Tensor fasciae lati. Lati doesn't refer to the fact that it's lateral. It just happens to be lateral. Lati means wide, just like in latissimus dorsi. But it still is descriptive. It's pulling on this wide tendon, which is a fascia. You also, in the front of the thigh, have this diagonally placed one. You can see the grain right here. And it's called the sartorius. Any idea what this word is from? Yes. A sartor is a tailor. Sartorial splendor, that phrase means being very well dressed. If you're dressed in sartorial splendor, that means you're the pride of the tailor. Anyway, it's called the sartorius because the way it's diagonally placed allows you, if you're sitting down, to cross your leg so that your so that your ankle is on the other knee, like this, which supposedly is how tailors would sit on a stool and do their sewing. That's why it was named that way. And you see the gracilis, which is immediately medial on the thigh, exactly medial. So if you put your two thighs together without the skin in there, you would be putting the two gracilis muscles together. Same root as in gracile fasciculus that I was talking about today in lecture. What is that? What does that word mean? Been about 6 hours ago. Seven. No? Well, I don't mean what does fasciculus mean. I mean what does gracile mean? It means thin. Remember I said it means thin? Cuneate, I said, meant wedge-shaped. But anyway, it means thin. And the gracilis is a very thin, there's not much thickness to it. It's not very meaty bone, but it's that's why it's called the gracilis. You have on the posterior aspect of the leg itself, which is from knee down to ankle, of course, two muscles that are examples of synergists. These two things do the same thing, gastric nemius and soleus, and you can convince yourself they do the same thing because when you look at the models, you see that they share a tendon. If they're both pulling on the same tendon, they're definitely going to do the same job, right? But the gastric nemius is the superficial one. If you were to remove that, you would see the soleus immediately deep to it. Gastric nemius, though, the gastro part of that word, same root as in the word gastric, which means having to do with the stomach, right? Gastrointestinal tract means stomach and intestines. So gastro means belly, and the gastric nemius has a fat belly to it when you look at it. It's much thicker than the soleus beneath it, or deep to it. Soleus, on the other hand, any idea what that means? Yeah, sole, but not S-O-U-L, S-O-L-E. Look at the shape of this. The soleus, you see the edge of it right here, but you have to imagine removing these little bellies, which is the gastric nemius, and you have a flat muscle that has this shape. What is this shape? What? A fish, right. Filet of sole. That's what the soleus looks like, a filleted fish when it's isolated. So that's why that was called that. Tibialis anterior, right on the front of the tibia. Extensor digitorum. Well, it extends the digits, right? And there are some long ones and there are some short ones. Longus means long, of course. Brevis means short. Brevity is shortness, to be brief. So make sense of the words, as usual, and look at stuff. Yeah. Well, that's what the gastric nemius is.
Right. But just like you say, like, oh, quads, there's no words.
Calf is an informal term, as far as the muscular system is concerned. Right.